Are you thinking about getting into Dungeons & Dragons? Maybe you're looking to expand your horizons as a DM or a player. If that's the case, then it's time for you to check out The Dungeon Cast, the best D&D podcast out there that helps you passively learn all about the game just by listening. Join co-hosts Will and Brian as they break down the lore of a rich multiverse 50 years in the making in a lighthearted and beginner-friendly way. They cover everything from character creation options to tips for dungeon masters. There's something for everyone, no matter how long you've been playing TTRPGs. Find The Dungeon Cast anywhere you get podcasts or on YouTube.
This episode is brought to you by Gamefly, the best way to rent or buy your favorite games. Listen!
Welcome to Nintendo Voice Chat, IGN's Nintendo podcast. My name is Philip Musin, and today I'm joined by Per Schneider, hey. Brian Altano, and Zach Ryan.
What's up?
How's everyone doing this week?
Good.
Pretty good.
I got a hunger. I'm hungry.
I'm hungry. I didn't have lunch, and I was sick last week, but
the hell's
I feel
wrong
better
with you
now.
It's like 4 o'clock. You got to eat lunch?
Meetings.
Yeah, I feel like...
Bring your lunch into the meeting.
Zach scheduled a meeting with me over lunch.
Didn't show up.
And then he didn't
Sorry.
Show up. No, like you showed up.
Okay, all right. Well, we're certainly not in any meetings right now. We've got a lot to talk about. There's been some big news dropping this week. I don't know if any of you guys have heard, but apparently there's some new Nintendo stuff happening in the media.
I like that you didn't call it hardware.
Yeah.
What is it?
It's borderline soft hardware.
Yeah. But yes, I'm sure many of you probably already know, Nintendo has officially announced Nintendo Labo, and it is their answer to, I guess, edutainment, I guess is the word
kind
that
of.
People are using.
Take that.
Or yeah. Lego?
Kiwi crates, like the Tinker crates, like the little project.
So it's like cardboard papercraft, essentially.
Yeah, it's hardware.
Switch. They're calling it,
it looks like some real maker stuff.
Yeah, it's called Nintendo Labo, but the actual kits themselves are Toy-Cons, which is, I love that name. I'm in love with it. I think it's a great name. Now, obviously, this isn't really aimed towards adults.
Speak for yourself.
Okay, yes. I know that there are many adults out there that are very interested in this. However, Nintendo has sort of said that this was aimed towards a younger audience, that adults could also play with it as well or play with their children with this product, but it is primarily, I guess, aimed towards a younger audience. However, a lot of us here think it looks quite fun.
Their messaging initially was for the young and young at heart. Right?
Young and young at
heart. So we were sort of anticipating that it would be some kind of peripheral. I don't think any of us had any idea that it would be this.
Right. It's definitely a peripheral.
Couldn't have predicted. I thought that was really smart that they said that because it lowered expectations from people saying, where's Metroid, right?
Like, people were still saying that.
But. No, but people wanted, you instantly say, hey, it's not going to be this.
Right.
And then you show it and it actually becomes a pleasant surprise because it is so freaking creative and awesome and like, I love it when Nintendo does something that I couldn't have possibly predicted.
Yeah.
And this was one of those things.
This is something that I don't think anybody really saw coming.
Yeah, like some of their strangest inventions in history. Once again, we've said this on the show a million times. They are a weird old 100-plus-year-old toy company that makes strange moves and does cool stuff.
Yeah.
But this is actually kind of mirrored in stuff they did in the past. A Twitter user yesterday brought up papercraft houses and cars that they put together as part of toy kits in the late 70s, which means they've always sort of done stuff like that. I specifically made an R-Wing out of papercraft that I got in Nintendo Power during a special issue back in the 90s. Like, this is something that fits with them. Nintendo and papercraft actually goes really hand in hand on the internet as well. And this is really cool because it's kind of moving people towards a more tangible side of stuff that video games historically move you away from. Like, video games keep you from making art and building and creating. So, this is really smart.
In hindsight, I mean, it totally fits with Nintendo's MO. They've created add-ons with great success in the past from like the little steering wheel holders for Mario Kart, right? Mm-hmm. With the Wii remote in the past too. Like the love tester and the extending grabber hand that was a Nintendo invention.
Yeah,
I'd love to see them do this in cardboard and bring this stuff back. I just think it's so creative. I just wonder where it came from, whether they looked at the kind of like the Tinker Crate and loot box, not the in-game ones, the loot crate market and said, hey, we need to have something like that, like a tangible product that can come out every couple of months and like, kids can build stuff or, I don't know where it came from. I have I kickstarted U-Gears. Have you ever heard U-Gears?
No.
It's a Russian they're like kind of like these wooden kind of press board constructions. Like you push out the pieces and then without glue put together these really elaborate structures. And like they made like a little toy locomotive. They made a hurdy-gurdy. I have the hurdy-gurdy. Yep. Yeah, the instrument. Like everybody loves hurdy-gurdies, right?
Yeah.
Or like a jewelry box with all these moving gears. And like that's what this reminded me of. But I guarantee you there was just somebody internally at Nintendo who loves doing these crafts. If you've ever been to a Japanese bookstore, they are like these little kits and things you can build. And he just – or she was super passionate for this and wanted to make this happen.
Yeah, I think the fact that – and you hit it right there. Like not having to use like glue or tape or anything like that. The fact that everything folds into each other is what makes this design so smart. Like in America, you might recognize stuff like this from Happy Meal boxes.
Yeah.
Which we had in like the 80s. McDonald's and Nintendo partnered last year on a set of Happy Meal toys and stuff like that. It's really cool to see this come into fruition like this, completely unexpected from Nintendo, obviously, although unexpected should be expected from them at this point. Yeah. And watching the sort of responses were great because most people totally got it and they were really positive about it. And then there was this kind of like, I don't know if you guys remember like Cinnamon Toast Crunch commercials in the 90s. It was all like adults can't see what makes Cinnamon Toast Crunch so good. And the kids were like, oh, it's the swirls. It's really good. Like it's delicious. All these people yesterday were like, I don't get it. $80 for cardboard. And it's like, well, they're not selling you cardboard.
Yeah.
Like it comes with a physical copy of a Switch game, which is what you buy when you buy Switch games. You might have seen that at every video game store. The cardboard's like $10. The props and everything are $10. What you're buying here is software that teaches you how to build it. It's got on-screen, like, you know, sort of instruction manuals that you rotate and scale the models and stuff like that. So it's really smart. I think that the sort of 3D modeling community is going to jump on this. I think that the 3D printing community is going to jump on this. Tom Marks, who works here at IGN, already built his own prototype of
it. Let's show this thing off real quick. So this is our little like beta version of Nintendo Labo.
Yeah, IGN Labo. Yeah,
if you're listening at home, we're holding what looks like a cardboard pool cleaner.
Yes.
Yeah. And it actually works. Cardboard cockroach with ears.
Yeah. And then hooked up to the Joy-Cons on the side and then using the sort of Find My Joy-Cons tool that's baked in every Switch, you can vibrate the Joy-Cons and it makes this terribly loud ringing noise, and then the unit actually moves a little bit.
Right, we're gonna have to turn it back on here.
You ready? I'll vamp on the until
right,
then.
Go, ready?
But anyway, he basically, there we go.
Wow, look at that. Amazing. Incredible. Look at it slowly
and
rotates.
It's off.
So that's the kind of experiences you can expect from Nintendo Labo this April. So look for that.
So this design, he copied one of the designs, but there's some really complicated designs. Yeah. Like when they pop open the robot backpack and you see all like the mechanics inside.
Specifically,
it's so cool.
Keza McDonald, who writes for Guardian UK, used to write for IGN, Kotaku, one of the best writers in the biz. She did a piece on, basically hands on with this thing and talked about how the piano took something like 2 hours to build and uses pieces of reflective tape on the inside of it that when communicating with the infrared camera on the sides of your Joy-Con, which you might remember using for the, I don't know, like the sandwich eating mini game in 1-2 Switch, right? It can tell how close or far your mouth is from the Joy-Con, which is weird. The reflective strips basically can bounce on and off using light and send a signal back to the Joy-Cons telling you which note you're pressing. That can also tell velocity and stuff like that. If you ever played a piano, how hard you press a note, et cetera, determines the key and the sound it makes and stuff like that. On top of that, there's knobs on the side that you'll be able to interact with. And like you basically built a piano out of cardboard and strings and rubber bands. It's pretty insane.
Yeah. Yeah, the trailer itself like showed a ton of different, or not a ton, but there's like 5 different toy cons that come with the variety pack. So there's going to be 2 packs available on April 20th. That's the exact launch date. There's going to be the variety pack, which retails for $69.99, and then the robot kit, which retails for $79.99. Now the variety pack is the one that comes with the 5 sets. So you get something like an RC car, a fishing rod, a house, a motorbike, and the piano that Brian was talking about. But they're all like those seem like they're a little bit on the simpler side.
Yeah.
So like those creations, like the piano you said takes 2 hours, but then something like the RC car like that might take just 15 minutes.
Yeah. And I think what's cool is like the piano specifically, the house And some of the other ones have the motorcycle. They have effectively built-in docking stations for the Switch. Mm-hmm. It won't charge your unit.
The screen,
yeah. Yeah, it kind of turns it into an arcade cabinet, which, you know, begs the question, when will they make an arcade cabinet?
Well, there was a fan-made one already, right? Right. Like some people have pointed out that some fans had designed cardboard constructions that can hold the screen. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But that to me is a no-brainer. I think what we have yet to see more of is the software.
Yeah.
Right? Like is the motorbike thing, is that like a mini Excitebike, or is it simpler than that? Like, I got some real Nintendo Land vibes when I saw what looked like, you know, almost like Project Giant Robot. Like,
right.
If like that kind of mini game brought back, and like it was the kind of the frog piano from Animal Crossing. Like, I'm hoping this is kind of like a Nintendo Land, like a theme thing, and Excitebike is part of this or something.
To me, it feels like a spiritual successor to like Wii Play or something.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Which
yeah.
is a like a cheap $20 mini game Kinect.
I don't want it to be generic.
I agree. Yeah. I agree. But it did have a fishing game and I think a racing game and a couple other things.
Well, I'd love for this to be a platform like you buy in one time with the robot kit, or you buy in one time with the variety kit, and you get the software itself that updates as new Labo kits are made available, right? Yeah. So it's something like a one-time expenditure of $60 gets you the software itself, and maybe there's DLC packs down the line that you can purchase for cheaper, so that it sort of justifies the cost of paying $10 to $15 for these cardboard construction kits, because they're probably going to all run about that much.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But it was crazy to me to see the sort of disparity between the audience. There are those of us that were really excited about it, and like, what an interesting concept, like, what a cool take on this. And then, like you were saying, it's just like, well, that's just cardboard. And it's like, well, it's obviously not just cardboard. Like, they didn't just set a Joy-Con on top of a pile of cardboard.
Dream a little, dude.
Right. And it's like, that sort of thing, like, would you rather pay $30 to $40 for a plastic version of the same thing that's not transmutable, like it's like in the way you were talking about the Mario Kart steering wheel, right, for the Wii, like that was a one-time purchase that only did one thing, and it was just a hard plastic $30 expansion that came with the game itself,
right?
Like in this case, it's $10 to $15 for each iteration, but you could get 3 to 4 different uses out of it. You know, like,
you can print out, right? You can print them out too.
I don't know if those templates are free. There was some disparity on that news story, but, it looks like they will be available in some capacity. And I think what's exciting about that too is that what's stopping Nintendo from being like, hey, we're having an event at the mall, and you'll get a download code for a digital Labo game and a piece of cardboard. And you go home and all of a sudden you're like, oh, I have an arcade cabinet and a free game I got today at the mall.
Yeah, I really like the idea of doing something like on the cheap, where it's like, hey, we'll offer you Mario Versus and give you the cardboard to build a micro cabinet.
Right.
And you just pop the Joy-Con off and set it up, and it's in a vertical platform.
That's a great idea.
And then you're just playing with the Joy-Con on a stand that you built. Like that's such an easy win and such an interesting way to display that product.
Maybe the template for the original arcade cabinet's graphics on the side, right?
Don't like even
you can
start
do
with
so
me.
Much cool stuff with that.
Oh, that's so cool.
Like, so I showed this trailer to my kids when I got home. Like, I saw it. I was watching it here. I was in a meeting, got out, a couple of people watching it, and they're like, oh, you got to see this. And like halfway through, I'm like, what were they smoking? And then it says release date, 4/20.
Yeah.
Couldn't be more perfect. And they're like, oh, you knew this. I showed it to my kids at home. They made the same joke, by the way. I showed it to...
What is it?
It's Marin County.
Sure, yeah.
Birthplace of 4/20. I showed it to them, and they were instantly sold. Like the moment the first things folded together, they're like, we're going to get this, right? Mm-hmm. And then it got to the robot backpack, and they're like, holy crap. Like, so that was the thing that completely sold them on it.
You told me this story this morning, and I think that the most shocking part about that story is that your kids still have to ask if you're going to buy a Nintendo product.
They didn't.
I feel like that's such a crazy question for your kids to be like, Dad, are we going to get this? Because like,
House of a Thousand Joy-Cons over there.
No, I think they get nervous. Like, look, I pre-ordered the thing immediately, but like, I think they get nervous. And then with a product like this, they're like, wait, what if Dad's going to build it and we don't get to build it? I think that's more what it's about. Like, they're worried. Dude, I got that big UCS Millennium Falcon, the biggest Lego set ever. And they're like sitting there crying because I was building it myself. I'm like, get away, kids. This is Dad's. It wasn't quite that bad, but they were a little miffed, I think.
Yeah, it's expensive.
I can understand.
As a kid that grew up on Lego and grew up on Kinects and Tinker Toys, like the idea of putting together something as involved and tangible and gigantic as this robot structure. Like when they popped off the backpack and it took me a while to puzzle it out because at first I thought it was all based on Joy-Con movement. Joy-Con can just read how you're moving your body.
Like positional tracking.
That's what it is. It's actually the infrared that's tracking, you know, like they pop it off and you see the four white lines moving across the, and it's like, oh, those Joy-Con are tracking where that is in that space to tell the game where your limbs are.
It's pretty insane.
And it's built out of cardboard. Like, it's insane.
It's like, it's levers and pulleys and knobs and switches, and they open up the panel in the trailer just to sort of be like, look. And it's like, you built a Gundam, dude.
It's like this crazy blend of like traditional, like tangible toy building and video games.
And then working around the limitations, right, that only one Joy-Con has the sensor and all that. Like that, I think whenever Nintendo has a limitation, they get super creative. And that's where, as an adult, what really interests me is not how am I going to play with this weird RC car, but more like, how did they do this? How did they come up with it? How did the mechanics work? I want to see inside. And like the piano, once I realized it was using the IR sensor to measure it, I'm like, that's freaking brilliant.
It's incredible that they made full use of all of the Joy-Con's features, everything from the IR sensor to like the HD rumble itself. When I first saw that robot thing, I was certain that he had a Joy-Con, or the kid had a Joy-Con on his left foot, on his right foot, each arm. But you're right. As soon as they like lifted that backpack and you could see what was inside, it almost blew my mind with how it actually works. Because I feel like any other company would have went a different route. Like they wouldn't have gone down like this left road sort of way of handling things. But in a way, it's a beautiful way to do it.
I think that it scales too, right?
Yeah,
like it's
does.
Like I think that. Given watching that trailer 3 or 4 times, like, it seems to me like you can operate that system with one set of Joy-Con, but if you have more, you can build out for specificity, right? Like, I think that it's
possibly, yeah.
Yeah, like almost an iterative thing.
I'm still modular, right?
Yeah, I'm that's where it starts to get dicey for me because like everyone's looking at this like, oh, it's cheap and it's accessible. And it's like, well, it's not because it's $300 for a Nintendo Switch. Right off the bat.
Mm-hmm, yeah,
if you don't live in the house of 1,000 Joy-Con like Pear does, you have to go buy extra Joy-Con. They're $80 a pair. So it starts to stack up a little bit. But I think the weird thing is here is like we talked about the Wii Wheel. There was a company. Remember that thing?
The Wii Wheel.
The Wii Wheel. There was a company out of Brooklyn a couple years ago that was at every E3 during like the Wii era, and they just made the cheapest peripherals. And they were like, they didn't even hide it. They were just like, look, we're cashing in. Like, we don't even know anything about video games. We're just doing this.
Yeah.
Like, they made an inflatable cart for Mario Kart for you to play in and stuff like that.
Yeah,
they made fishing rods and all this crap. Those were made of plastic. Those were like $20-$30 a piece. Somehow those look cheaper than stuff that's made of cardboard.
Because of the elegance.
Yeah.
You know, like you just kind of see the elegance of this construction. But you guys were mentioning like where is this going to go? Just imagine a Labo kit that's Mario Party where you build a board.
Right.
And you build the little figures and you color it all. And then you literally have the board game part as part of Labo and you have your screen there and play with Joy-Con. Like there's many things they could do with it.
See, I'm so interested in the integration of their bigger brands, their bigger franchises, because to me, it seems like it would be two completely separate products for separate demographics.
I think it's cool if they make it an option. Like for instance, if we ever get a Luigi's Mansion game on Switch, I think it would be cool to have like a Poltergust 5000.
Oh my god,
Labo.
That's a great idea.
You know what I mean?
We already got the backpack.
Yeah. Or a Mario Sunshine like, you know, type of
jetpack
thing. Yeah.
Get the house. Color it like Luigi's Mansion. You're already halfway there.
Mm-hmm.
There you go. Exactly.
So I think
you just need the software.
Yeah. I think what's interesting about this is that it doesn't seem to be happening sort of at the regret of some of their bigger AAA franchises. Like this is their wave two movement to attract a blue ocean of new consumers. Last year we saw hardcore gamers grab Mario and Zelda and all the other games, you know, the Doom and stuff like that. This year I think you'll continue to see that, but you'll also get to see a new wave of people come in and buy a Nintendo Switch. And it's really smart. It doesn't seem like this is going to cannibalize the next Zelda game or the next Mario game. This will work in synchronicity with those things.
Right. Yeah. Like Nintendo has gone out and basically said that this is to reach a broader audience, essentially. Like the Switch is selling like astronomically well right now, all over the world. Mm-hmm. So they're not too worried about capturing, I think, the core gamers. We're here. Yeah, we've been on this boat. But I mean, at the same time, they still want to widen their audience, make it a little bit broader. And I think that this is the perfect barrier of entry to breakthrough.
Totally. Well said.
Such a great idea.
I also think that it's crazy that how well it showcases every single, I know you touched on this, Phil, but like every single feature of the Joy-Con.
Yeah.
Because I remember at the launch event or at the reveal event back January this time last year, they spent a lot of time talking about all the things that the Joy-Con could do. And I was like, who cares? I want to know about how I'm implementing this in the game. I want to know about how I'm like what this means for me as the player, not necessarily like all the like ticks and tricks that it can do, right? The amount that Labo uses every single facet of that Joy-Con is insane. Like, I was sold from the outset, but when I watched the guy control a little, you know, like Tom Marks's contraption here, like control like an RC car that was moving on vibration, it's just like, that is nuts. Mm-hmm. Like, yeah, I love
what
it.
What is this? What should we name this thing? Is this the MarksCon 2000?
The MarksCon 2000.
Kind of looks like Sonic the Hedgehog.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a little bit on this.
Now we have to reiterate, that is not actually a Labo kit.
No.
It's not.
That's made from scratch.
This episode is brought to you by Gamefly, the best way to rent or buy your favorite games. It's gotten increasingly difficult to try games before you buy them, but Gamefly lets you take your pick from a library of over 9,000 titles, including the biggest new releases like Super Mario Odyssey, NBA 2K18, Fire Emblem Warriors, and many, many more. Gamefly will ship these games to you, and you can keep them as long as you want. There are no late fees or due dates, and shipping is always free. This breaks down to as little as 54 cents a day. So ask yourself, how many moons can you find in Super Mario Odyssey for 54 cents a day? Oh, and you don't even have to leave the house. The games come right to you. And hey, they rent movies too. Normally, a Gamefly trial lets you only check out one game at a time, but if you head to gamefly.com/voicechat, you can sign up for a free premium 30-day trial that lets you check out two games or movies at a time. Try it out today at gamefly.com/voicechat.
Yeah. We forgot to mention that the robot thing is actually a resurrected version of Miyamoto's which was officially canceled last February. You guys know that? Nintendo was actually like, this is canceled. And no, it's not.
Maybe they salvage parts. It's hard to tell sometimes, right? Sometimes they're in love with a character or an idea, and maybe the gameplay is completely different. We don't know yet. But
how many times have we talked on this podcast about how no Nintendo idea ever really goes away?
Yeah.
It's just put in a vault until they're ready to talk about it later, right?
Like 1,000 Marios, right?
Yeah.
Like that demo where they showed all the little Marios running around, and suddenly you've got Mario splitting into multiples, and you know.
I still feel like that. Like the 100 Marios became Pikmin.
Yeah. No, that's right. They talked about that. The dynamic of the characters moving was used for Pikmin.
Zach, I know you had mentioned that one of the peripherals or one of the toy cons that they showed in the video was like a camera type thing. And I think you had said something like that would be really cool for like Pokemon Snap, if that would ever happen. Mm-hmm. So I could totally see them implementing something like that, in the future, like making it an option, but having a camera, that you can actually like insert a Joy-Con into the lens and then another one to kind of hold and click the trigger. During that video, I paused it and rewound it so many times to watch that over and over again to study it, try and figure out like, how could this possibly work?
Watching you, watching you watch the videos has been one of my favorite things like since your arrival, because like, you kept pausing the video and he was like, look at these white strips. Those are infrared strips. He's so like freaking
it's
out.
Like,
yeah.
It's like Jack, it's Jack Skellington trying to figure out Christmas. Yeah. How does this work?
Yeah. Well, the camera is shown for a few seconds in the thing, right? I don't think it comes with any of these kits. It's part of their sort of like rundown of like weird future peripherals. And one of them is a swan that you squeeze the wings on and it just flaps its wings. But the camera, by twisting one Joy-Con in the front,
like a zoom, right?
And zoom.
Yeah.
And then by clicking, you take a picture, and it's got the sort of viewfinder in the back with your switch screen. And it's just brilliant.
Yeah.
It's just so smart. And I can't wait to see that get used.
Was the switch screen actually in the back of the camera?
I think so. I was sort of theorizing.
So that'll be like an in-game view. Obviously, the Switch doesn't have a camera, you know, so you can't use it as a real camera. But like it can detect the motion then and like make you kind of look around in a virtual world, right?
Yep.
Yeah.
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 Yeah, that's really cool.
Yeah, it's really smart.
Man, what a curveball.
Yeah.
Curveball.
No, I mean, it's very, very interesting. Very cool stuff from Nintendo this week. It caught a lot of us by surprise, but I think for the most part, we're either excited, intrigued, or just plain old interested in what's happening right now in the current state of Nintendo. But, we're going to take a quick break right now, and then we will be back very shortly to talk more about some new releases and the big releases coming out this week on Switch. Here we go! Welcome back to part two of Nintendo Voice Chat. Thank you very much for waiting through that very small break. We're back now with Lily Zaldivar.
Hi, close. You were so close.
I tried.
It's Zaldivar.
Zaldivar.
Or as you like to call me,
Zanzibar.
Zanzibar.
Okay. Legend of Zaldivar.
Yeah, Legend of Zaldivar.
Wow, what?
Lily's subbing in for Pear real quick. Pear had a meeting to get to, but it's great to have you here, Lily.
Yeah, as thanks always, for having me again.
Of course, thanks for coming on. Yeah. We're going to just briefly run over some quick news and then talk about some new releases and what games we've been playing. But before we get into all of that stuff, did you guys hear that the Switch is selling three times faster or is apparently selling, three times faster than the PS4 in Japan?
Yep.
Which is
I'm not surprised.
Crazy.
It's crazy. I also read it's the fastest selling video game system of all time in Canada.
Yeah, Canada.
Go Canada.
Go Canada.
I'm honestly not surprised. Like, just with the amount of releases that are coming out every week, like, it's the perfect system to take everywhere if you want to.
Yeah.
So, of course. I don't know why, like, this is a surprise.
They're also, I think, proud. The big thing, too, is that you can actually buy one now, right? Like, that was a big
struggle for
half the system's life was just not knowing when and where you could get this thing. And having availability towards the end of the year at the holidays was good news for them.
Yeah.
Yeah, of course.
And I think they're still banking on releasing two of the best entries of the biggest franchises in gaming.
Yep.
You know what I mean? And I think they will continue to bank on that. I think that playing to the nostalgia factor of Mario and Zelda is a key seller for the Switch.
Yeah.
And that people are going to see people playing Mario, Super Mario Odyssey or Zelda out in the wild and be like, hey, what is that? Like, how do I play that as well?
Yeah. Weirdly though, that said, when you go into the eShop charts on the Switch every week, it's games like Stardew Valley. It's games like Rocket League. It's games like Minecraft that are, you know, some of them don't even have physical versions. They're like $20 digital games or whatever. And they're actually selling better than the Marios and the Zeldas are. So I think people are coming in the door for Mario and Zelda and they're staying for like the breadth of indie games and just cool downloadable content that's available on the system now. So
it's this really interesting dichotomy, right? Because on the one hand, you have a segment of gamers that are saying, well, the Switch is only ports. But then on the other side of that, you've got the segment of gamers that are going, yeah, the Switch has a bunch of ports. Yeah, give me everything. It's like there's this sort of, this sort of like, ubiquitous idea that's like, that's great. I really like your game. When is it coming to Switch? Cause that's the only place that I want to play it. And I think that sort of mentality has sort of bolstered the Switch in terms of like, well, eventually everything will come to this. So
Well, I mean, there was a long time where a lot of us were like, yeah, just put it on Switch. Just put everything on Switch.
Right.
And now we're getting so much stuff that it's like, all right, well, maybe we don't need that game on Switch. Right. You know, so
like maybe calm down a little bit. I was very impressed with, also Super Meat Boy doing really well on the Switch in like, I think a week. And, like that just, improves like the value that a Switch holds like for developers too, because it's like Super Meat Boy came out when like 2010
on Xbox 360 and I keep planning to do this for Up at Noon. I want to put together like a sort of, and I can't keep up with it because it happens every week, a sort of like long segment based on the massive first day and first week and first month successes that indie games have had by coming to Switch for the first time. The Meat Boy dev specifically said that the numbers that it did day one on Switch almost met the numbers that it did in initial launch on Xbox 360.
Yeah.
And that's when that game had all the attention in the world. People were watching it for the very first time. And here we are, you know, what, past half a decade later, and it's still cleaning up.
It's got a bigger install base and a base that's like hungry for games that they haven't played yet.
Yep.
And that's the thing, like you're bringing over a lot of these older ports, but a lot of these people that are Nintendo fans or people that weren't traditionally gamers or haven't been since like 64 or GameCube are now playing catch up on games like Meat Boy, right? Like but also catch up on Meat Boy. Top notch.
How to do it.
But
I think that it's a case of like, well, I never got a chance to play it. Like I know personally I bought a bunch of games on Switch just because I've never played them. Like I missed them in their first iteration.
Right. So you know why you didn't? because you, like everyone else here at this table,
didn't own an Xbox.
No, because historically, and I'm going to call everyone out on this, historically, Nintendo fans did not buy third-party games. Outside of a few every year, we didn't.
Yeah.
We bought first party games and we bought third party games on other platforms because there was never really a reason to. The catch 22 there was that like ports of games coming to Nintendo platforms were usually not great. So, it was a chicken and egg of like, why support them if it's not good? And they won't make more if we don't support them.
Yeah.
And now we're in this good spot where the ports are really great. Everything's working out and people are supporting them like crazy. And I could not be happier.
Well, then I feel like maybe this is more niche, but like, I also feel like there's repeat offenders like myself that will buy a second, a game that they've already played elsewhere just to have it on their Switch.
Yeah.
Like, I'm excited to play Night in the Woods when it comes to switching on February 1st. Yeah. Like that was one of my favorite games from last year. Now it's portable. Great. I bought Oxenfree, same deal. Like Dark Souls is coming to the Switch and that's a game that I've already played, but like I just the ability to play it on the go wherever I want. Like I'm going to Japan in February and it's like I wish that I had Dark Souls then. I would take it with me and play it the whole way there and back. So I think that those factors alone, like way, like you're saying, you aren't surprised at all. Like that way justifies the numbers, you know?
Yeah, totally. I mean, like you were saying, just having those third party games that a lot of us may have missed before because we are Nintendo fans and having them, now on a portable console is just incredibly enticing for someone like me who did miss, games like Wolfenstein 2. I still haven't played that, but I'm going to play the crap out of it on Switch once it comes out. So exactly. But let's talk more about some games that we are playing this week. One game that I've been playing a ton of, and I actually just reviewed it, is Innerspace on Switch, but it's also available on PS4, Xbox One, and PC. And I know, Brian, you played a little bit of this as well.
Yeah, I played a couple hours.
Yeah, so this is kind of a cool game. It's a flight exploration, narrative-driven...
Steam.
Yeah.
Yeah,
type of no, you're doing
flight
it.
Game. Yeah. Yeah,
it's hard.
So no, you're saying reminiscent flight.
Yes. So,
yes.
Yeah. So it's a little bit like Abzu, but to me this game is way more abstract and there isn't too much guidance or player guidance. Yes. So you spend a lot of time just sort of figuring out what you're supposed to be doing or what you need to do. Like the game does tell you, you need to, like the general basis of what you're doing. But as far as solving puzzles and opening up clues, that's all based off of your own intuition.
Yeah.
Looks like an Arwen.
I love the art style.
The art style itself is absolutely breathtaking. But like, as you can see, there's different sort of planes. They're called airframes in the game. So there's different airframes that you can acquire, which is really cool. Like that one in particular is really fun to fly around if you're watching on screen. That's called the Astral Key.
Yeah, this is a weird, beautiful game. It feels kind of like a fever dream. It doesn't really punish you for getting lost or screwing up or dying. There isn't really combat per se. Like there's some of it, but it feels like flying around inside of a lava lamp.
Yeah.
Like it's just bizarre and there's collectibles, there's things you can do, there's things that open up. But like Philip said, like it doesn't really say like this is what you have to do next. It sort of nudges you in a general direction.
Yeah.
But if you want something sort of like kind of hazy and weird and cool to explore on your Switch, like put some headphones in and give this one a shot. Philip, what did you end up giving this?
I actually gave it a 6.5.
Okay. Yeah,
which is okay.
Yeah. Okay. Is that literally okay?
It's literally okay. Yeah.
So what are some of the detriments? Like what didn't you like about it?
Like I was saying before, it's so heavily intuition based that I found myself getting frustrated just trying to figure out what it was that I actually needed to do. That was my main gripe with it, other than like other smaller things like the limited amount of collectibles. There's no real reason to go back and explore the game after you complete it. Yeah. It's got a really short campaign as well.
Navigating the environments feels a little bumper carsy every now and then.
So right.
Like you'll kind of just smack around the walls until you figure out which way you need to go.
Yeah.
Right.
How are the controls on the Switch?
So the controls feel pretty good. It doesn't have motion controls.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, that's
so
good.
Yeah, you just use,
I feel like with flying, that'd be really weird. You're like,
yeah. I think Star Fox 64, 3DS, both created and destroyed any chance of that
Fox
ever happening. Yeah.
Yeah, but overall, I mean, it's an okay game. If you're into exploration games, I recommend it. But if you're not really sure about this one, I would just hold off for like either a drop in price or just skip it entirely. Yeah.
I have one final question. Can you do a barrel roll?
Yeah.
Oh, okay, cool.
There's no like Star Foxy maneuver to
an
like...
animal doesn't yell at you when you do it.
Yeah.
You just do it and nothing really happens.
I just had to get it out of the way. Yeah. I have to ask.
There's not a lot of animals in this game.
But another big game releasing this week is Darkest Dungeon, mm-hmm. which has been out on other platforms as well, on PS4, Xbox mm-hmm. One, Steam.
Yeah.
And now it's out on Switch.
Yeah.
Which is very exciting. And I know that, I've played a little bit of it. Lily, you've played a bunch of this game.
Yeah. This is, I think it's like an amazing graphical RPG that you don't really see often. A little bit more on your darker side.
Oh yeah. Totally.
Hence the name.
Yeah. But, I really like it. I think it's a different type of way of playing, like the RPG style.
So it's obviously a turn-based RPG, yeah. And it's a little bit, it leans towards like heavier, more complex mechanics, I would say. It's not really like a jump in and play game unless you really understand
RPGs.
Yeah, unless you really understand like deep RPG mechanics.
I would suggest someone plays if they've played RPGs consistently. Mm-hmm. I would then step into this one. They don't, like, the tutorial, there's not really much of a tutorial.
There's a little bit of a light tutorial. Yeah, like,
it's
I played through.
But I feel like this game needs, like, a more in-depth tutorial because if you look underneath, like, there's so much, like, you know, like, attack damage, like, what you can do, like, your dodge percentage. Like, there's a lot of, information on mm-hmm. the screen that you don't also see. Like, you have to complete quests, do all these things, like... It's a very dense game.
Yeah. But that's okay, right? Cause like I'm replaying Bloodborne right now and I forget how much of that game is just sort of just like, figure it out or go read a guide.
Yep.
You know, like the game doesn't actually nudge you in the direction.
I feel like this is that type of like game. Like mm-hmm. this is like the Bloodborne of RPGs where it's like you either you're going to get it or, you know, go read a guide and figure it out.
Right.
I mean, technically Bloodborne is the Bloodborne of RPGs. I feel like Darkest Dungeon is a really cool game because it does some things that traditional RPGs do, but it does it in a way that's really interesting. First of all, it's tough as nails. It's like really super difficult.
Oh, yeah.
And it introduces elements like hunger or faith or, I mean, fatigue, like that carry over into the non-dungeon segments of the game. So like you can have
there's like a hub world, right?
You can have like characters that are like monks or priests in your party and they'll lose faith, and so that means that their attack goes down and that some of their like a lot of their attributes go down. Or you can have party members that have been in the dungeons too long, so they get hungry and then they get depressed, and like you have to figure out a way to like cure these other like long-term status ailments to make your party effective in the dungeons. And that in and of itself is like a secondary challenge, almost in the same way as like the social links in Persona are a secondary element to that game.
Right.
Well,
essentially, it's like the sanity effects from something like Eternal Darkness or something.
Oh yeah,
like,
yeah. Totally. But it's
characters start to lose it a little.
It's
bit.
Yeah, but it's less so. Like it's more. The effects are more straightforward than it is in Eternal Darkness, where Eternal Darkness has those sanity effects to mess with you, the player.
Yeah.
This is like for your party at large, and it's
yeah for the overall
more so of an obstacle than it is of like a puzzle to solve.
Right.
And not only that, but like I think you get up to 25 characters, but one of the biggest things that I realized with this game is that when a party member dies, like you never get them back.
Yeah, it's permadeath.
Like you lose like permadeath. So it's pretty like you have to really think about what you're doing. You have to critically decide like how to make sure that the overall party survives going into every single dungeon that you go into. So it's a critical thinking RPG. Mm-hmm. Really boggles the mind.
You're playing this now.
Yeah, I'm currently playing it. I've played about half an hour last night, and I played it on Switch. So I can confirm it has full touchscreen controls.
Well, that's cool.
Which is cool. You don't ever have to have the Joy-Con on there.
So. Interesting.
Yeah, and it works really well. But I spent most of my time actually playing with the Joy-Con just because I prefer that. But I feel like it's pretty much a straightforward port of what I've seen played on PS4 and PC and all that stuff before. The full game is there. I'm looking forward to jumping into it. I've already gotten myself killed like 3 times. successfully completed the tutorial though.
Mm-hmm.
But that's about as far as I've gotten. But yeah, I'm excited about just how everyone else is gonna, you know, feel about this game and, you know, what more games like this we will eventually get on Switch.
And that's out today.
Yeah.
Yep.
Well, yesterday, I guess, if you're listening yesterday. To this on Friday.
Yeah. Yep. But yeah, let's talk about some more new game releases coming out this week. In addition to Darkest Dungeon and Innerspace, some more games that came out: Gunhouse, Energy Balance, Nightmare Boy. I played a little bit of Nightmare Boy. Did you guys try out Nightmare Boy?
I've seen a couple trailers floating around. Like, it's like a cool like platformer.
Yeah, it's like a Metroidvania style platformer.
Yeah, I wasn't into the art style at all.
Yeah, yeah, it looks, it's got a very 90s vibe, like it's, yeah.
It looks like, the term animatic, which is like when, animation is very, very in its rough stages, no offense to them, but that's just how I
think. Yeah, totally. I think that's kind of what they're going for, right? They're going for this very, sort of hand-drawn, crude kind of high school angry kid on the notebook paper type of thing. So it's working, right? It's just not. It's not for me anymore.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I've drawn enough angry stuff in the margins.
Yeah, it's a Metroidvania game, so if you're looking for a decent Metroidvania, check that out. Also releasing this week, Link Apix Color and Oser the Hollywood Roast and Oser the Insult Simulator, World to the West, Nucleon, Vesta, and last but certainly not least, Kirby Battle Royale on 3DS. So if you're still holding out on your 3DS, if you still have it, which I'm sure you do, and you're a huge Kirby fan, it's releasing this week. Pick it up. We don't actually have it in the office yet.
Really?
What a shame.
Yeah, so I haven't played it. That's going to be like a thing that we get on release day.
Yep.
So yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. Excited. I'm looking forward to checking it out though. So it's going to be fun. But that means it's time for question block. So, this email comes to us from our email, nvc@ign.com, and it's from Ryan W. from Richmond, Virginia. Ryan says, "Dear NVC crew, I just finished watching the introductory video for Nintendo Labo and my first instinct was to reach out to the NVC group and share my thoughts and questions. I first want to say I'm blown away by the creativity and pure joy these cardboard creations will bring to Switch. That said, do you think that Nintendo will actively search to partner with Lego or other building block companies to create Labos that reach an even broader audience? I'm so excited to see Nintendo continue to implement amazing concepts with the Switch. Thanks so much for reading. Looking forward to hearing your reactions this Friday."
Aren't they already partnered up with Arby's? Oh. Sorry.
I was concerned about the Arby's Twitter account yesterday. I'm like, this is their whole thing.
I was like, did they take the guy who creates all of the cardboard?
Seriously.
And was like, we need you for Labo.
Yeah. Meanwhile, over on Arby's Twitter, they've released like a full marble sculpt of the Labo. Yeah. They just got to go in a completely different direction.
They're like, we got to step it up.
Well, this is getting tough. I guess this is how we cover this.
I don't see that happening. I'm still holding out for Nintendo to partner with Lego in a more traditional way and just do like Zelda and Mario sets. Like that just seems like a basic thing to do. Mm-hmm. That said, like we said earlier in the show, I think people are going to make their own. I think it's very obvious that people will start making, if they haven't already, start making, sort of shells and cages and places to keep their Joy-Cons out of Legos, out of other materials, 3D printing and stuff like that.
Right.
I don't see them partnering with them in any official capacity, because I think what makes this special is the cardboard, is the fact that it is so understandable and tangible, and that the barrier for entry is so low, aside from the $300 system and the extra Joy-Cons and stuff like that. Lego is expensive. Pear was on the show earlier talking about his $800 Millennium Falcon. Like, yeah. It's not cheap, man. So I don't know. We'll see.
Yeah, I think it'd be wiser for Nintendo to stick with the cardboard aspect of Labo. But at the same time, I could totally picture people like 3D printing their own like light gun version of a Labo kit, and just to have that sort of like hard feeling type of thing that they don't have to worry about it breaking. Like they can just toss it around like a controller.
I'm just imagining that people are going to mod their cardboard boxes, maybe like figure out how Nintendo makes it work and then mod it into like using Legos or using like a different type of material, like 3D printing, and kind of incorporate the cardboard box feel into it. I don't know, like, but all I can think about is just modding. That's over time.
Yeah, people are going to be really into that.
I think it's built for kit bashing.
Yep.
Yeah.
This kind of stuff. I mean, we're already seeing it happening with, I mean, Brian has a Super Nintendo themed, Switch deck on his desk, which is the most base level, right? Like just throwing a decal on there. But I think that a lot of the interesting stuff from Labo comes from that sort of modding and kit bashing. And I don't necessarily feel like Nintendo is a company that needs to partner with somebody else to get that message across.
Right.
Like, yeah.
Like it would be more, honestly, almost more beneficial for Lego for Nintendo to partner with them in that respect, because this is a corner of the market that Nintendo has basically just created for themselves, right?
Yeah.
Like introducing a variable to that, I feel like it would almost be detrimental to the overall brand, but
I think it'll be interesting to see people make their own, because when I first started seeing the shapes of these things, I was like, that reminds me of like 90s polygons.
Yeah.
Like it looks like Mario 64 or Metal Gear Solid or something like that. And I think that if you look at something like, I don't know, Donkey Kong's bazooka thing that he uses in some games, like we saw a bazooka at the end of the trailer. I don't know if you guys caught that.
Yeah.
Like this dude cocks back a bazooka and it's just made out of cardboard. And it's like, why not make one of those that looks like something from Smash Brothers? Or like, why not make a Master Sword? Like I think people will start to reverse engineer the things that we see here. Like, the small car, why not make a Mario Kart, right? Like, see what works. There's so much room there, and kids are smart and they're intuitive and they're artists, and that's when people create and paint and draw and sculpt and cut and scratch the most, is at that age. So like, bring it on.
Yeah, I'm really excited to see like what kids do with this and like take it and run with it. And like it's all about just intuition and like all about science and creativity and this like, and video games, and this further propels like the advancement of that with kids.
This also gets them it gets them into like science classes, right? It gets Nintendo into like bookstores
for
and
robotics.
Edutainment and robotics. Yeah. Like it gets them into weird corners of conventions that they're not at already.
Right.
You know, like it's so interesting. It also means that like, I don't know, like Girl Scouts can partner with them and be like, the box of cookies turns into a gun. Why not? Gun Scout cookies. Have fun.
There you go, people. You heard it here first. Girl Scout. Gun Scout cookies. Gun Scout. There you go. All right. Well, that's our show. Thank you so much for watching and listening. We're a weekly show on IGN.com, but you can also find us on YouTube and any of your favorite podcasting services. So definitely make sure you're subscribed if you aren't already. So Lily, where can people find you at?
You can find me on the MVC podcast forums and Cool Cat Lily Z on Twitter.
Brian?
I'm an Agent Bizzle. You can also catch me on the podcast forums. I'm also on Podcast Beyond and Up at Noon every week here at IGN.
Awesome. And Zach?
I sit over by the windows, and my Twitter handle is @ZacharyEisty.
Cool, and I'm @PhilipMewson, and we'll see you next week.
Are you thinking about getting into Dungeons & Dragons? Maybe you're looking to expand your horizons as a DM or a player. If that's the case, then it's time for you to check out The Dungeon Cast, the best D&D podcast out there that helps you passively learn all about the game just by listening. Join co-hosts Will and Brian as they break down the lore of a rich multiverse 50 years in the making in a lighthearted and beginner-friendly way. They cover everything from character creation options to tips for dungeon masters. There's something for everyone, no matter how long you've been playing TTRPGs. Get inspired while learning all about the unique planes of existence. Get the in-depth knowledge you need to help your combat encounters feel impactful, or learn about the origins and pantheons of every race and class the game offers. No stone is left unturned as every edition of the game is explored and explained in a way that benefits players of all different levels of experience. You can expand your TTRPG horizons in a way that's as entertaining as it is educational just by listening. All you have to do is go to your favorite podcast app or YouTube and search for The Dungeon Cast.